Hello and welcome to the Flix Forum podcast, where each episode we usually go back and we look at a Netflix original film in the order of release. Today we've got a very special bonus episode where we're changing things up a bit to discuss the upcoming Oscars, or the 96th Academy Awards, which is in a couple of days' time, especially considering Netflix has quite a few nominations. I'm Jesse, your host as always. Thanks for joining me. It's nice to put these together. I mean, it's a little bit hard doing it solo, but, you know, in the past, MJ's been on here with me. I think last year, from memory, our newborn had just been born, so I recorded it in the car, in a car park of a pub. So it's nice. Hopefully the audio quality is a little bit better this year, but this is my favorite time of the year. This is the time of the year where I get excited about the Oscars and what it means to the film for the year. And it's just, I get, you know, so excited about this. So we're going to do a little bit of a show. We're going to cover off some of the big categories, some thoughts, some ideas, and obviously look at the films nominated for Best Picture, and probably round out with some other hits from the year that I enjoyed film-wise as well. But obviously we've got to talk about Netflix. They've got 15 nominations, I would say. They're counting 16 because they are counting the May-December nomination for them, even though it wasn't a Netflix worldwide distribution. But if we look at the nominations for Best Picture, this year they have Maestro. I don't think there's any chance there of that winning. They've got Best Actor. They got two nominations, Bradley Cooper for Maestro and Colman Domingo for Rustin. For Best Actress, also got two nominations. We've got Annette Bening for Naiad and Carey Mulligan for Maestro. Best Supporting Actress from Naiad, we've got Jodie Foster. Then we've got Best Original Screenplay, which is where May-December sits. I'm not counting that, but I'm going to put it in there anyway. Best Foreign Language Film, we've got Society of Snow from Spain. Best Animated Feature, we've got Nimona. Best Original Song, It Never Went Away from American Symphony. We've got Best Sound Editing, we've got Maestro. Best Cinematography, Maestro. Best Makeup and Hairstyling, Maestro and Society of the Snow. And Best Short Live Action, we've got two nominations there. We've got The After and The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, the Wes Anderson short. Big. That's a lot of nominations. So, I don't know. I don't like the chances for a lot of them for Netflix. I think they're going to walk away pretty empty-handed. Obviously, in the lead-up, I would have really enjoyed to have covered a few more of those shows. I watched a lot of films in the lead-up to this ceremony. I did want to do a bonus episode on some of those Netflix nominations. I wanted to do one on Naiad. I wanted to do one on Society of the Snow. I wanted to do one on the Wes Anderson shorts, but you know, life gets in the way sometimes. So there are a few bonus episodes for some of the nominations that we'll talk about as we go today. But let's talk about some of the big categories. Best Documentary Short. I haven't seen all these, but if we go through, I think what we've got here, I think the favorite is the ABCs of Book Burning, which I think is going to win. Then we've got the other nominees are The Last Repair Shop, 99 WIPO, which is on Disney Plus, and the two that I have seen, The Barber of Little Rock and Island in Between. I really enjoyed The Island in Between. I thought it was really good. It was a sort of little story about people living on in between Taiwan and China. I thought that was really nice, but yeah, there's just some nominations there. Best Animated Feature. So the favorite at the moment is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, but this is one that's really close because The Boy and the Heron, Miyazaki's last film, sits like they're so close. So I'd love to see Miyazaki win. I don't know. I mean, it's the first Spider-Man from this trilogy won a couple of years ago for Best Animated Feature, so it's interesting to see. The other one's a Netflix nomination. Nimona is in there as well. Really enjoyed that film. We do have a bonus episode on that if you want to check it out. Elemental, the Disney Pixar film, it was all right. And Robot Dreams rounds this one out. Absolute complete waste of time. I really hated that film. Don't give it a go. All right, the Best Adapted Screenplay. At the moment, the clear favorite is American Fiction, followed by Oppenheimer, then Barbie, then Poor Things, then Zone of Interest. So American Fiction, I think this could be maybe its only award that it picks up. Good film, decent little film. We'll see how the awards go with that one. For Best Original Screenplay, I think this one's a clear favorite for Anatomy of a Fall. The Holdovers might have a chance. I don't know. I feel like that's going to be one that sort of walks away with very little. Past Lives is in there too, which is nice. Maestro and May December right at the end too. So yeah, Anatomy of a Fall, good film too. The Best Supporting Actress, this one's, and you know, once we get to these acting categories now, there's very little movement, I guess, because I think these have been pretty much set in stone for a while. Devine Joy Randolph from The Holdovers for Best Supporting Actress. She's paying $1.02. That's how short her odds are. Emily Blunt's the next closest, which I thought was interesting, from Oppenheimer. She's paying $13. So a big gap there. It's her award. Also nominated, we've got America Ferrera for Barbie, Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple, and Jodie Foster for Naiad 2. And then the same for Best Supporting Actor, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer. dollar two, clear favorite. And then, surprisingly, I guess, Ryan Gosling sits in at second for Barbie at $13. Mark Ruffalo from Poor Things is then the next or the third favorite. I really enjoyed his performance. I thought he was hilarious in that film. And then Robert De Niro and Sterling K. Brown round out our nominations. Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon and Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction. Best Actress. This is probably the most interesting category for the acting category because Lily Gladstone and Emma Stone, they've sort of, you know, as the award ceremonies have gone throughout this campaign, sort of traded who's going to win. I guess at the moment, you've got to go with Lily Gladstone based on her her win from the SAG Awards, the recent SAG Awards for Killers of the Flower Moon. I still really rate Emma Stone's performance from Poor Things. So, yeah, really good one to watch. Sandra Hüller from Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan from Maestro, and Annette Bening for NIAID. They're just there to make up the numbers. It's really a two-horse race between Lily Gladstone and Emma Stone. Best Actor again, clear favorite. Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, $1.06. Paul Giamatti's the next closest for the holdovers at $7. You know, it'd be nice for Paul Giamatti to get up, but, you know, Cillian Murphy, I think, has won every single award that he's been nominated for this film. Bradley Cooper, then, for Maestro, Colman Domingo for Rustin, and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. Very surprised that Jeffrey Wright's, you know, on the odds, the down the bottom. Very, very surprising, because he was excellent in that film. All right, our last two categories that we're going to look at, Best Director and Best Picture. Again, there's not much movement here. Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer. It's paying $1.02. The next closest is Poor Things, Yorgos Lanthimos, $21. So Oppenheimer, clear favorite to win for Best Director, Christopher Nolan, his award. We've also got Jonathan Glazer for Zone of Interest nominated, Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, and Justine Triet, our only female nomination there, for Anatomy of a Fall. But Nolan, I think this one's his. And then the Best Picture, the odds. So our clear favorite is Oppenheimer. It's paying $1.04, and then Poor Things is the next at $17. So this is already over, pretty much. It'd have to be a very big surprise for Oppenheimer not to clean up some of these big awards. Then in order, we've got The Holdovers, Zone of Interest, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, American Fiction, Past Lives, and Maestro. Right at the bottom, paying 101-1. I mean, great bunch of films. And this is where I probably want to look at these films sort of individually and talk about my rankings, I guess, for the best picture. And obviously these aren't my rankings of best films for the year, but out of those top 10 pictures, what have I got? I'm going to go backwards from 10 with my rankings. So for me, the worst film out of this bunch is Maestro. It's a by-the-book biopic. You know, Bradley Cooper does a great job at moments in specific performances, and if you've seen the film, you'd think about that conducting scene. But the over-topness of it all, and it's almost like arrogance from him demanding recognition, really took away from it for me. It's, yeah, the least favorite of these 10 films for me. In at 9 for me, I've got The Zone of Interest. I know this might be a little bit controversial. Steven Spielberg, he said, it's the best Holocaust film since his own Schindler's List. I'm glad he didn't say it was better, because it doesn't compare. Like, yes, it's good. It's a good film. It's impactful. It's well done. But it's almost too artistic, where it didn't need to be at times for such an important story. So for me, that's at number 9. Number 8 for me, American Fiction. And it's hard, because now obviously they're all great films coming in. American Fiction for me, like, you know, it's probably the funniest out of these 10 films. I really enjoyed it. I'm sad it's so low on this list, but, you know, because Jeffrey Wright, he plays that part perfectly, and it is very similar in theme and tone to a Netflix original film that we did cover on this show from 2020 called The 40-Year-Old Version, which I highly recommend. Check out that episode if you're keen, and check out that film, because it does the same themes just as well. Number 7 for me, Past Lives. Almost unlucky that this film was released so early. I think like A24 probably thought they were going to get the run like they did last year in the awards with Everything Everywhere All at Once, because it is a great film. It's a sad film. There's this staircase that's going to stay with you once you watch it. And the story behind those final shots out on the street where they're waiting for an Uber is just so well done. Such a really good film. Highly recommend Past Lives as well. For me, number 6, Anatomy of a Fall. Just thinking about this film brings back memories of that reggae sort of 50 Cent song. I mean, that just was stuck in my head for so long after watching this film. I mean, it's wonderfully put together. There's so much to think about, and sort of what a performance by Justine Triet for so many different... It's not Justine Triet. That's the director, isn't it? I think I've stuffed it up. I'm talking about the performance from... She's also in The Zone of Interest as well. Also, I'm sorry, I've completely lost it. Best Actress is Sandra Hüller. Sorry, Justine Triet is the director. Yeah, great film. So many different languages. Just really well done. Courtroom drama, but effective. For me, number five, The Holdovers. Holdovers, what a great film. And for me, living in Australia, it was a shame that this didn't get released during the Christmas period. You know, because I think it's going to be a go-to Christmas film for many people. Paul Giamatti is great. And just the way it highlights how one person can make a change is going to stay with me for a while. So Holdovers, really good at number five. Now, our top four, Poor Things. Mark Ruffalo, I mentioned this before, hilarious. I thought he was so good in this film. Emma Stone just impacts every scene, such clever dialogue. I think it really deserves repeat viewing. So high on the list, at top three for me. Number three, Barbie. I've got Barbie up really high because this was a breath of fresh air for me. The color, the music, that soundtrack, that played in my car for months. And you know, I've seen this film three times now, I think, and it gets better every single time. Gosling's hilarious. Margot Robbie brings that emotion that it needs. Really clever film, and I think a really good film. And then we go to the top two for me. The second film, or the second best film of the year for me, is Oppenheimer. I mean, it's still a masterpiece. I did that Barbenheimer day, and I'm glad I watched this first. So I didn't finish the day on such a downer. It's going to get the awards it deserves. I'm not saying this is a bad film, not being my number one. But for me, my number one is Killers of the Flower Moon. I just have a really great connection with this film. I took a class of students to see this film, played in an old school theater, played on film reel. It was a great experience. Scorsese does it masterfully. It's this, you know, a white man telling a story that shouldn't be his to tell, but he does it respectfully and highlighting what's wrong with the white man too. This is a must watch. I know it's long, but for me, the best film out of these 10 films on that list. All right, other good films from the year, other films that didn't get nominated or are sort of films that I wanted to highlight from the past 12 months. So for me, Missing. This is almost like a sequel to that in-screen sort of film called Searching with John Chow from 2018, I think it was. Very similar film, but the updates in technology, really, really good. So that's worth a watch from me. 20 Days in Mariupol. This is nominated in the short documentary category. I mean, it makes me feel sick at various stages. I didn't touch on it earlier. I think it probably will win the best documentary at the awards. The voiceover in this just didn't work for me. But other than that, a really good doco. Brandon Cronenberg's Infinity Pool. If you like horror, you'll like this, and you get a Mia Goth fix. So that was good as well. Flaming Hot, the Flaming Hot Cheeto Story. I know this is probably a weird one to put on the list. I think it's on Disney Plus in Australia, maybe Hulu elsewhere. Eva Longoria has directed this. The use of her camera, it was exceptional. It's nothing new in that genre, but it has that claim of being Oscar nominated because it's got a Diane Warren song that's nominated at these awards. So give that a watch. I thought that was good. Evil Dead Rise. I think this was filmed in New Zealand during the pandemic. It's got like the best horror elevator scene since The Shining and Cheese Graters. If I say Cheese Graters and you've seen this film, wow. Good horror film. I'm going to mention Air, the story of Nike or Nike. Ben Affleck doing his thing. Great soundtrack. Good use of telling a story without Michael Jordan actually being in it, really. So good film. I'm going to put Reinfeld in here. Nicolas Cage, he's great. I mean, it was fun, but it wasn't funny, but just nice to see a classic character done in a different way. The Covenant, Guy Ritchie film on Amazon. It's got to be on my list because Jake Gyllenhaal's in it, my favorite actor, but also just this subtle anti-war film that was done really well. I thought that was excellent. One of my favorite releases of the year was an Australian film called The New Boy, directed by Warwick Thornton, an Indigenous man. It's about the struggles of the Indigenous population in Australia. It's beautiful, it's moving. Cate Blanchett's great in it. It's funny too, and definitely one of my top films of the year. Check that out if you can. May, December, obviously not much Oscar love, but Natalie Portman, Julianne Moore, so good in this. It is a gross story though. It is hard to watch, but it's just done really, really well. Wes Anderson obviously had a very busy year this year with his Roald Dahl Netflix shorts, but I'm going to talk about Asteroid City because this was visually stunning and it was in a weird way that only Wes Anderson can do too. So Asteroid City there on the list. Another Netflix film that I want to touch on, Extraction 2. This was a good film. Hemsworth, it was better than the first one. We've done a bonus episode on it if you wanted to listen to it, but get on board. Extraction 2 was good as well. Another doco here on my list is called Take Care of Maya. This really broke me, this documentary. It got me so emotional. It's about child protection in the USA. Must watch. Thought that was really, really sad. A short, Once Upon a Studio. This is this little Disney short where they highlighted their 100-year anniversary with so many characters that you'll probably lose count. I thought that was a really good watch. Nice and short. I'm probably surprised that wasn't nominated for Best Animated Short. The Flash. I'm going to put The Flash and Blue Beetle in here. These are the two DC films. They're probably the two best superhero films of the year. It's weird to not have a Marvel film on this list. The Flash, you know, if you take away these two big battle scenes, I think there was like the opening one had a baby in a microwave and this CGI fest at the end. Not too bad a film. And the same with Blue Beetle, considering it got no support for being a part of that dead, you know, DC universe. It's not bad. Great representation of the Latino community. I'd give those a watch over any of the Marvel stuff this year, to be honest. No hard feelings. Jennifer Lawrence. This was really funny. Had a lot of heart. There's a beach scene that I'm not going to spoil for you, but once you get to the beach, there's going to be something that's going to surprise you. Really, really surprised me. Quite funny. Good film. The Boy and the Heron. I mentioned this before in the animated feature film. I'm hoping that it does win the Oscar because it could be Miyazaki's last film. Just a layered and complex film. Worth the watch if you've got the time. And definitely watch it with subtitles in the original Japanese language. Another animated film I want to put on here. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem. Kind of stiff, I think, that it didn't get nominated for Best Animated Feature. It was different. The style, it was funny. It was just a really good time. I guess some of the pop culture references in there may not stand the test of time, but this was fun. Another Netflix original film, You Are So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah. Adam Sandler film gets his daughters to take center stage, and it really works. It's a great teen film. One of Sandler's better films in a few years. Got a bonus episode on it as well. Bit of a self-plug. Get on there and listen to it. I really enjoyed that film. Nearly done. Saltburn. Probably the most memeable film of the year. Some real whacked scenes. But how good is Sophie Ellis-Bextor's song, Murder on the Dance Floor? I mean, that song's been charting across the world based on this film. So Saltburn gets a mention as well. Another Netflix original film, The Killer. David Fincher and Fassbender. Just a great, fun, almost dry time. Bonus episode for that out from us as well to check out. Saw 10, Saw X, the best Saw film in years. The first half of that film was done so well and so differently to any others in that series. It sets it up nicely for the 11th film, which is coming out this year. Tobin Bell, as always, excellent, and this is his film to shine. So if you're into the Saw franchise and sort of haven't watched one in a few years, this is one to look at because it does tie in closely to the first few films. Another Netflix original film. I've got a few Netflix films in here that I've enjoyed. Leave the World Behind, directed by Sam Esmail. This guy just knows how to work a camera and focus on society and its issues, especially with technology. This had one of my favorite shots of the year, which has this physical media collection at the end of the film. Great film. Got a bonus episode on that one too, so check that one out. Another little short from Disney Plus. It's called Now and Then, The Last Beatles Song, which is the shortest, you know, it's Peter Jackson using technology to, you know, pick up an old Beatles track and put it together. And I guess that work that Peter Jackson's doing on the restoration game, it's really, really cool. So give that a watch. Another horror film, Thanksgiving. The Return of Eli Roth, I guess. Great horror film. Give that one a watch. Nearly done. Napoleon, I'm going to put it on the end. I know it's not an awards contender that they probably wanted it to be, but still a solid historical, you know, picture. Not bad. I think that's on Apple TV. And the last one, this isn't really a film, it's a Paramount Plus special, but it's called South Park, Not Suitable for Children. So funny. Just made me laugh. One of the funniest things I saw all year. I love South Park. There's been some hit and misses with these Paramount Plus mini movies they've been doing. This one's worth it, especially if you know anything about Logan Paul and that prime energy drink. Very, very good. All right, we're ready to wrap it up. We're on socials. We've got X, formerly known as Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Give us a follow. Give us a like if you can. I just want to know, what are your predictions? Who's going to win? Let us know. We are obviously back on Monday, which is Oscar Day, with our next episode. We do have a huge back catalogue, 350 episodes. Give us a listen. Look for a Netflix original film. You may find one. I'm going to try and put out another bonus episode before the Oscars, just with one more sort of coverage of something that's been nominated. But other than that, thanks for joining me, and may the person or the film or the creative team that you want to win on Monday or Sunday in America, the Oscars. See you then.